Hello, and welcome to For the Girls, for our series For the World. I'm Tiggy, and we are here live at Brackley at the Mercedes Factory. My first time here. My eyes are popping out of my head, to be honest. But I am joined by two incredible guests, Bradley Lord, Chief Communications Officer, and Ali Ashpatel, the Head of Sustainability, Director of Sustainability here. Ali, welcome back to the podcast. We had you on last year, and Bradley, welcome to for the first time. I was saying, the last time I saw you, I think, was in Las Vegas eating breakfast at 2 p.m., but it's nice to see you at home and on hopefully a more normal schedule.
Yeah, I feel a bit more aligned between time zone and time of day, yeah.
We love that. So we're about halfway through the season, a little more so, and at the time of recording, Mercedes is on a 5 podium streak, 2 of those wins. I just want to start by saying, how's the feeling at the team right now?
It's really buzzy.
Yeah.
And full of energy. I think we've known where we wanted to go for quite a lot of this season. And you have this phase between sort of the eureka or the light bulb moment of this is what we need to do. And then watching those ideas become drawings, becoming parts, becoming things that actually get onto the race car. And having been through that phase and then go from Canada, the run of podiums on merit at every race that we've managed to have. Mm-hmm. The fact that we've been a little bit disappointed with some of those podiums, because we're kind of like, oh, damn it, we thought
sign.
We were going to be a little bit better. That's a really good sign. Yeah. And then obviously the two wins, George's first in Austria, then Lewis at Silverstone. They just give you all of this positive momentum for free. And once, you know, momentum you can't confect, you can't create, you can't say, right, now we're going to do momentum. It needs to build on performance, and it's a really, you know, legitimate thing, and when that starts to come, then it's just brilliant. It's like riding the crest of a wave, and it's a slog at every single race weekend. You know, as we're sitting here recording, the engineering briefing for the weekend is going on in Spa, so we've got to keep getting every detail right. Yeah. But no, it's just starting to roll, and it really feels like you can just feel that building, and that's really cool.
Yeah, we can honestly feel it a little bit walking around. It does feel buzzy. I like that word, and I like momentum for free, although no such thing as a free lunch. You all are working very hard. So speaking of Silverstone, would love to hear what that was like for you all. I mean, even those last 10 laps, and would love to hear what that was like for the team and what's happening in those last 10 laps during something so exciting like that.
So Silverstone was an amazing weekend for me, both personally and also then professionally. I mean, my brother got married on the Silverstone weekend. So it was a really, it was probably one of the most exciting weekends I've had, because I had this amazing Friday where I got to celebrate with all my family, got up on Saturday feeling slightly tender, and then got to watch qualifying, and just the feeling of getting that 1-2 in qualifying was just like unreal. And then seeing the WhatsApps going off and seeing everyone talking about it was just amazing. And that, for me, being slightly newer to the team, actually experiencing that for the first time was super exciting. And then obviously the nerves kick in, because you're like, great, and Saturday was great, and now it's on to Sunday. So then being able to watch that and experience that and know everyone at the track side was having the most amazing experience afterwards as well was just really special for me.
And I think in the garage, I mean, those last, you know, Lewis came out, made the right switch at the right time to the dry tires, took the soft because we didn't have a medium available, and we were wary of going onto the hard tire. And it's like, right, 12 laps, he can make that last, and he comes out in the lead. You're like, yes. And then you basically go into 12 laps that feel like, you know, Le Mans.
Yeah.
And it just is endless. And it's like everything's happening in slow motion. And oh my God, how many laps? Oh no, we've only done one. And you know that, you know, like when you're a kid before Christmas and you keep waking up every 15 minutes, you're like, is it time to get up yet? And no, it's actually only half an hour since you went to bed. It's that feeling. And yeah, so it sort of built and built. And then the moment of him winning, there was obviously the, you know, the frustration that George had to retire. Mm-hmm. And it's always, you know, it's always really hard when one car's out and the other one's done really well.
Yeah.
Because you know, as a team, we've let a driver down because we've had a reliability issue. But equally, I think George was one of the first there to congratulate Lewis in Parc Fermé. And then just the release of emotion was something you normally only get when you win a world championship.
Yeah.
And we've been fortunate to do lots of that with Lewis, but to do that at Silverstone, home race, for him. Home race for the team here and in Brixworth. Loads of our colleagues and teammates in the stands. It was, yeah, really unique experience.
Yeah, like Toto and many others said, you couldn't have scripted it better. So
I think if you'd scripted it, people would say, "Nah, that'll never happen. It's not really." Yeah. And that's the magic of sport, though. It delivers those moments that you can't, you know, would get rejected in a fictional scenario as not being, you know, it's too many stars aligning at once. That doesn't feel authentic. Yeah. Yet when it happens, it's just magical.
No, absolutely. And I am a Mercedes fan, and those last 10 laps for me were unbearable. So I can't imagine what it was like for you all, but just the absolute best. So would love to hear also a little bit about kind of the ethos of Mercedes, and kind of both from a comms perspective and just being on the team, and from a sustainability perspective as well. Like, how do you think about Mercedes?
Wow. So I've been fortunate in my career to work in one other team at Enstone when it was the Renault F1 team, in a couple of different guises, and then here at Mercedes, and they've both been amazing places to work and be part of. And first of all, and first and foremost, it's about being part of a team. Mm-hmm. You may be in a role that never goes trackside, and we had someone from our team actually in Hungary last weekend as trackside for the first time in 40 years working in Formula One. A guy who works down in our composites team is integral to producing, you know, carbon fiber componentry of the highest quality. 40-year career in F1, he'd never been to the track. Wow. So you can have careers like that all the way through to people, you know, traveling to every single race, Bono or Marcus on the radio to the drivers who are seen publicly too. But we're all one team, and that you don't work for a company, you work for a team. Yeah. Obviously you're employed by a company, but that feel of team is really, really important and sort of true to all of the organizations in their different ways. What I've found most unique about Mercedes, and it's something particularly that came with Toto and his vision for what the team should be, is in lots of teams, when you're not in a technical function, you're seen as being in a less important or slightly secondary area. And so it's, okay, you're in sponsorship, just give us the money and we'll go and make the car, and then magic results pop out. But you've done your bit. Or you work in, you know, the HR team, or you work in finance, and all what we call the support functions, because they are supporting functions to the core effort of making a fast racing car and being a brilliant racing team. But here, we think of all of those things as integral to how we achieve results. Yeah. Not just necessary, but a really important part of it. And if one bit fails, the other bits perform less well too. Yeah. And they're interdependent back and forth. So the area I work in and the way we model the company, it sits between the building the sponsorship and the marketing platform through good communications and the brand and stuff, but also links right back to the trackside team and race engineering results, because that's where we do our communicating. So I think the level of respect for the job everyone has to do and the contribution everyone can make is the thing that defines the Mercedes-ness of this place. And I've obviously got no benchmark from other teams, so I've not been in one for a very, very long time. But as people join us from other organizations, they talk about how much you're empowered. So in whatever role you're in, how much freedom you have to go and achieve according to what objectives you've been given. And that level of respect between the different functions, and, you know, the way our race teams support our marketing efforts and welcome guests at track, or the way we are, you know, it's easy to be in a comms team or a media team and they go, well, you're going to go and tell all the journalists that, so we won't tell you this information. Whereas there's a level of trust inside the team. And you see that also how we talk to the team. You know, we share a heck of a lot of information, quite a nervous making level of information within the organization, and stuff doesn't come out.
Yeah.
Because you put the trust in and you get the trust back. And that, for me, is what makes this place special, in addition to obviously having the responsibility of representing like the seventh most valuable brand in the world.
Yes.
And being, you know, able to stand on the shoulders of the Mercedes-Benz star and everything it stands for, and then add our culture, values, and you know, that little bit on top. But you've joined a lot more recently than me, Ali, from a different industry entirely.
Completely. So from the construction sector to here, and I do actually kind of echoing that point of, for me, what I think is so amazing is that the people are the innovators, and that you see this like real willingness to collaborate. I mean, in sustainability, the thing you definitely don't want is to be, here's my idea, and then pushing it all the way through and no one jumping in. And like, you know, it was really a proud moment in the sustainability report and things like that to be able to go, actually, here are the people who've achieved these fantastic things that they're not sustainability professionals, but they are doing something because they understand the positive impact to the team and to the wider industry. And so, you know, by looking at how they can be more sustainable in how they travel to work, or by looking at how they can kind of collaborate to create a new supply chain of sustainable fuels, which does take a lot of effort and time, it's really amazing to kind of see people go leaning into that and being like, I believe in this and we're really supportive of the mission that you've got. And I think that's unique and quite special to have that in, I think, and it comes from being a sports team and all having this unifying goal, but having a place within that goal to be able to thrive and deliver.
Yeah. Anchors were places where that love developing. You know, F1 team is always optimistic because the next development's going to be the one, or it's the thing that fixes, it's the better. And so we're always chasing better. And so as long once you can bring other sectors into that and start chasing better in those as well, you unlock the essence of a team, which is always pushing forward, always striving for the next thing. Yeah. And that's just really fun to be part of. And on the days where you wake up going, I'm not really up for it today, I'm feeling a bit rubbish, or, you know, which we all have, it's the thing that pulls you through, because, you know, your teammates are there and pushing up that same energy, and you kind of get dragged along by the flow of the current, basically.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, and that's so important for a team, but especially for sustainability, where it really matters. Every function matters when you're thinking about sustainability and having it be a holistic effort,
but also unlocks other good stuff. You know, today I lift shared with one of our colleagues who works in the aero department.
Wow.
So it's kind of also his chance to kind of catch up with what's going on in our world, and for me to kind of, as I say to him, so what's going on in the wonderful world of wind, and you know, what's happening over in the tunnel, what's the latest areas that you know we're working on. And that's just, it's a, you sort of build a human connection and a friendship, but also sort of cross-pollinate on, and you know, on ideas and what's going on. And we've already had moments where that car journey has led to us being able to do things better or differently, because you've just got a dialogue that wouldn't happen in the normal run-of-the-mill sort of going to your meetings and things through the day.
Creative combustion, we love that. So you mentioned this level of trust and being able to share things across different teams and having that confidentiality. Obviously, F1 is a very high-profile sport. There are more and more demands on information and personalities and people than ever. But, of course, it's a competitive sport. There's a lot of confidentiality required. How do you sort of balance the need for confidentiality with that desire for transparency? And especially from a sustainability perspective, that must be difficult, because you don't really want to necessarily be competing on that. But it's helpful, and it's helpful to collaborate. But obviously, you know, we're a competitive sport.
Yeah, no, and I think what I find really refreshing about sustainability in Formula One and is that actually there is a real willingness and an understanding that we need to collaborate on this. Formula One has set up a great group through Ellen where we actually meet and we regularly share ideas between the sustainability professionals. And it's really nice. I think when I was talking to a year ago, kind of that group was still very new, and there was this kind of slight nervous energy about what can we share? How should we be doing this? And now everybody understands the value and how we can collaborate effectively and still have our own unique projects that we're all working on. But actually, that I know now my counterpart Kim in McLaren, and we'll have a conversation, or Adam in Red Bull, and we can start to actually go, where can we drive positive change together? Because we've seen, for example, where we have collaborated, we've been able to unlock things in the regulations that have allowed biofuels, sustainable aviation fuel, which only have a positive impact on the sport. And so I think it's really great to actually see that in something that is as competitive as Formula One, that actually teams are leaning into sustainability, Formula One's leaning into sustainability, but that we can all still have our own journeys and stories in that space, and that we're all working on slightly different things. But that's actually a good thing, that we're all trying different areas, because not everything we all try is going to be right first time, so we're going to need to learn. And it's refreshing to have a group of really driven individuals all working towards this.
And it's clear that in sustainability, our sport is only as strong as its weakest link, not its strongest. So for us to be benchmark class leading in sustainability is fantastic, the result of a huge amount of effort. But if we're not prepared to share that knowledge, if we're not prepared to help the tide rise and lift all ships, Formula One, and therefore by implication we, will be judged by our worst performer, not our best performer. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that we are living our obligation and our duty to the sport as well as to ourselves is really important in that area, as well as the areas of social impact, you know, mm-hmm. across social impact as well. Mm-hmm.
And so how do you think about that balance of transparency and confidentiality in the broader comms view? You know, everybody wants to know what Lewis and George are doing all the time. Everyone wants to know, wants an inside look at the team. But obviously there are boundaries. How do you think about that?
In the broader comms view, we try and tell the same story inside and outside the team. Not everything is interesting to all audiences, but if we're talking about where we are on performance, what's coming with the car, we try and vary the level of confidentiality, but not the story we're telling, because it's truthful, it's authentic. People can smell inauthenticity a mile off. Then you have social media and how that translates into the demands of different audiences on different platforms. And there you fill the appetite for content and the expectation for content with a story that reflects that same true narrative, but obviously adds other things to it as well, be it fun things that justify themselves in their own way or leaning into trends and other sort of happenings in that online space. Likewise, it's a space that's fertile in opportunity for conspiracy and misunderstanding as well, and you need to be alert to that at different points too. So there's definitely a perception that we were disadvantaging Lewis in our balance of social media coverage at the start of the season, which actually reflected the fact that he, to some extent, wasn't hugely wanting to lean into doing stuff on social media because he was really wanting to focus on performance and delivering on track. And so there's an opportunity element to that. And you always get held to an impossible standard, and you always see things being misunderstood or willfully sort of misinterpreted, some of which are worth correcting because they're to be taken seriously, and others of which you just need to let wash off your back like water off a duck's back, because you could spend endless time correcting everything. And it's more about making sure that if we're sort of on a white river raft and you're going down rapids, we're kind of steering to avoid the biggest rocks, but it's still going to be bumpy and there's still going to be exciting moments along the way. Yeah. And that's kind of how I visualize my mental picture of F1 comms. You can't control everything. It's an illusion to think you can, but you need to keep communicating through difficult moments. Otherwise, you will leave a void, and that void will inevitably get filled with less accurate information than a team can provide. But you've also got to accept kind of there's going to be rough and smooth periods. Mm-hmm. And as long as your direction of travel is broadly correct and you've not sort of hit a rock and all been capsized or beached the raft on some point of the river, you're doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's very wise and mature and reflects many, many years in the sport. So that makes a lot of sense. I want to talk a little bit about leadership. We love seeing you next to Toto on the TV, and I think Toto has been very involved in the sustainability practices. Would love to hear about his style of leadership and how he's especially been on the sustainability side and the importance of that.
Toto is a brilliant leader. I think we're all very, very lucky to have at the sort of apex of our organization somebody like him, for whom values are the sort of starting point for what he does. It's not to say, you know, all of us have our foibles and quirks and things like that, but Toto is someone for whom strong values, loyalty, honesty, no politics, these things are super, super important. When I say no politics, obviously we're in a highly political environment, but within the team, no politics. Mm-hmm. He encourages people to recognize, own, and learn from mistakes rather than suppressing them. He wants people to speak up, and he's got a brilliantly mischievous ability to listen to, indulge, and sometimes throw at the rest of us the really awkward thing that he knows we don't want to do, because he's trying to get you to question what's your preconception that's making you kind of go instinctively go no, rather than being open in mind enough to go, okay, let me listen to this and see where somebody might be coming from. So he's great at that, and great at also not trying to make it all perfect or fix it. It's about aligning the efforts of team members with the objectives of the team. Same with the drivers. He understands a driver has to, at some very deep level, race for themselves. And there is, the challenge is not suppressing that personal interest in becoming driver's world champion, but aligning it with the team's desire to be constructor's world champion and the framework within which we ask the drivers to race. And it was very interesting in Hungary, sort of thinking through the situation in which McLaren found themselves, that which we've been in many times, and having actually seeing his real empathy for the challenge that puts you puts on you as a leader to prioritize the greater good of the team over the individual good of the drivers. And it's a complex thing, it's a hard thing for fans to understand, because most people come to Formula One through the drivers to the teams, whereas when you're in a team, it's very, very much that this is our collective effort. That car is effectively 1300 people's work into a machine, and the driver is part of that chain, but not a predominant part of that chain, just one very important link in a very long chain. And that clash of perspectives sometimes is hard to understand from the outside. Obviously it polarizes, creates loads of controversy and all of that, and again, that's one of Toto's great strengths, leaning into the sort of rough edges and imperfect bits of how things happen and understanding why, rather than leaping to judge.
The sign of a very strong leader.
And I think from kind of a sustainability perspective, it's incredibly empowering, kind of, as Bradley said, the kind of asking the probing questions. And we do get the probing questions, and that's good, because I think it's really important to be challenged. But then also the respect and the kind of permission to go and try these things, that we know we're trying solutions that we don't necessarily know all the answers to. So we're setting targets and we're having permission to set targets that we know technology needs to advance. We've got to go and innovate. But actually, the belief that the team can do it and the permission to go and try, I think, is a really unusual position in sustainability and a great privilege. And then it kind of, I think it then inspires the team, because then they get the chance to go, actually, we've got the buy-in right from the top. The top have said to go and do this. Toto believes in this. He's backed this. The senior leadership team have backed it. Now you get the chance to go and fix it, solve it, answer the difficult questions and come back.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. And we can see some of that from the outside, but it's nice to hear a direct perspective from the team on, you know, the inner workings and how that actually comes into play. So thank you for sharing that. Diving a little bit more into sustainability. So congratulations on the recent report.
Thank you.
Recently released. So exciting, a very fun read for us. And congratulations also on the 10% decrease in race control emissions. That was really amazing. What are you most proud of this report this past year?
So it's really hard to pick a most proud moment, because kind of actually sitting back and being able to share the report back with my kind of mini sustainability team, it was really nice to reflect and go, guys, all of the, like, the long hours, the hard work that you've put in, this is what you've created. And it doesn't just, you know, I think sometimes in sustainability you can get so into the nitty gritty and so passionate about a project that when you step back and go, actually, look at this huge impact. Like, your cumulative effort has delivered this 10% reduction across logistics, travel, commuting here at the factory. And so actually it was kind of really nice to be able to share that back with them and then go feel good about that, and then kind of actually reflect and then hear the positive feedback kind of externally that actually we are moving in the right direction on all of our targets.
Yeah. That's so nice. And when we talk about net zero, removal is a big area of focus that you all announced. We'd love to hear a little bit more about that strategy and some of the announcements there.
Yeah, so we're really committed to kind of cutting our emissions, and we've got plans to 2030 to cut race team control emissions by 75%. So there's lots of work in that space and we can touch on that. But we know there are residual emissions. There are residual emissions, and every sector and every industry has this challenge. And in order to kind of meet net zero, those residual emissions have to be removed from the atmosphere in some way. And there's kind of two technologies that do that. There's nature, and so trees. Mm-hmm. And then there's also things that are newer and much more innovative, like improving soil health, because actually the soil, you would never think it, is one of the largest carbon sinks in the world. And so improving those ecosystems can help massively reduce our carbon in the atmosphere. And then there's the technology, the innovation side, which is actually sucking the carbon out of the atmosphere through a number of different ways, whether it's by blowing over hot minerals and reacting it to basically create new rock, where there are a whole host of different technologies. And so the the market is, the technologies are there in very early form, but they need investment and they need scaling. And so what we've really felt is critical is that we know we want to be in that market. We know we're going to need those solutions, but we can't wait for those solutions to be perfect. We need to start investing now. And we, that's why we've committed to a advanced purchase with Frontier, which is an organization looking at investing in multiple solutions so that we know that not one horse is going to win this race, it's going to be a number of them. And then also investing in Soil Carbon in the UK, which is an amazing farm just north of here. It's so rare to get a carbon removal project in the UK. And so it's been really great to actually visit the farm, see what's happening there. They're implementing kind of new farming practices, and you're like, farming, F1, how are they linked? But these new farming practices are helping improve soil health. So it's massively increasing the amount of soil that's being taken, amount of carbon that's being taken into the soil. And it's also improving crop yields. So you're addressing other issues like food security. Plus it's bringing more biodiversity back to the fields because you don't put one crop, you put multiple crops, you're rotating them. So it's kind of got these amazing co-benefits that help our local environment, help, you know, kind of wider industry, but also are creating a market case to say, these technologies need to be invested in. And if we invest in them, we help address the climate crisis and other things and allow us to still enjoy the things we want to enjoy for those unavoidable emissions.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. I mean, our focus on this trip has obviously been motorsport, but we've also done a couple visits to a tea company, for example, or Silo is a restaurant in London that's the first zero waste restaurant. We got to go behind the scenes and kind of see their processes, and people don't always make the link directly of sport and some of these other industries thinking about sustainability and about these practices, but there is an inherent link and all of this matters and all of this ties together. So I think,
and I think for me, involved with our sustainability activity but nowhere near as deeply as Ali is, the innovation capability and the optimism that is around sustainability is so exciting to be part of and to be able to contribute to from where I sit as well, to see from food waste in our hub restaurant downstairs no longer going to waste but you know, meals being repurposed and contributed and donated to the local community, all the way through to how we're changing behaviours at track with something as simple as the CO2 footprint per meal on the VIP menu, for example, to the big projects we're doing as well. It's super exciting to see the innovation that it's unlocking and to take sustainability from something that people are worried about or fearful for or see as a threat to our sport and transform it actually into the biggest opportunity Formula One has had in many, many generations, because many sports haven't got the technological component that means you can be contributing genuine solutions and innovation to how the world is going to tackle this. Yeah. And the way Toto expresses it, and I think it's a really nice way of thinking of it, is we can be a real test case for if Formula One can do it, there's kind of no industry that can't.
Exactly.
And
highest level of
the way that we can produce technologies that are emblematic of and can drive changes in personal mobility, in be that in cars, in buses, in aeroplanes, all the way through to the test cases we can provide for an industry such as the core producers of carbon fiber, where their product goes into many, many different sectors around the world. And Formula One is a tiny one, but again, if you can do it in F1, if we can show that a more sustainable or a bio-based carbon fiber can work in F1, that opens the door to aviation, to fashion, and all of those things. And that's the opportunity that we're sort of out there running against our competitors, but with our competitors to kind of achieve that goal and that objective.
And I think that idea that actually it is about performance, you're really starting to see that as well, like in the team, people starting to actually go, this is something I can lean into because it is it's a good thing. So we've had people reach out, and waste is never the glamorous topic that anyone wants to talk about, but we've got people, you know, building the car, reaching out going, could I do this in a better way to actually look at, you know, this is how I'm building it currently. Can you come and just walk the floor with me? And then at the end of it, let's look at what I've produced and see if I can do that better, which is fantastic and amazing. And you can see all of the reasons why that works. And from a sustainability professional, I'm like, yes, let's talk more about waste.
Well, energy management. You know, we've got a big push on energy management at the moment. And one of the groups in the team, the Aero Machine Shop, have achieved a 30% reduction in their electricity consumption, which is great for us because that means we're paying for less, so good for cost cap, and brilliant for our energy usage targets. And how do we bring that story to life to then inspire other teams to get into that wonderful sort of virtuous circle of competition where, well, we've done 30, we'll do 35. Yeah. We'll show you, we're going to do 40. And that's what you unlock. And again, it's that sort of alignment of this drive forward and drive to improvement, and building a layer of sustainability objective into it is what's working really, really well at the moment.
That's why we love and are so optimistic about sports, but especially Formula One, as a place to be thinking about sustainability and driving that forward.
We recently did a sustainability event, and Howell, the managing director at High Performance Powertrains, so up at Brixworth, did a little bit of a first insight into what's coming for 26. Mm. And he sort of said, right, there's this bit of the power unit, we're doing this. All the textbook says this shouldn't be possible, but we're going for the thing that shouldn't be possible. And you're kind of like, wow, that's really cool. Yeah. And I literally, in a WhatsApp today, described it to somebody as the 50% electric magic machine. And they're like, oh, that sounds really interesting. And that's what's coming. That's what's being worked on for the future. And the same in the sort of incredible chemistry that will be behind this advanced sustainable fuel that's going into it. And again, just starting to get that little insight from the chemists and the experts at Petronas and what they're coming up with, and the innovation pathways they are using to get to the end product that we'll be racing. It is such a great reason to be excited, but we kind of, all the Christmas presents are going to stay wrapped for quite a while longer as that anticipation builds.
Well, speaking of 2026, obviously a big shift towards more sustainable regulations, which is great with the sustainable fuels, more electric component of the power unit. Mercedes does have a good track record at the change of regulations and doing well and preparing. I know a lot of this is still being worked on, still confidential, but what can you tell us about how you're sort of thinking about 2026 and what the focus is on right now?
I think it's the most exciting opportunity F1 has seen for a very, very long time. It's our chance to show the world that sustainability equals fast and exciting, not a little bit slower and a little bit worse, but it's fast, it's exciting, and it's new. Yeah. And it's like, I think it's a bit like what it must have felt like when Kennedy sort of said, we are going to go to the moon before the end of this decade. It's a journey into unexplored territory, but really exciting territory that we've not gone into yet. And we've simplified the power unit, so it's not as complicated as it used to be, so that new manufacturers can come in, which is great and exciting. We're seeing Red Bull powertrains with Ford, we're seeing Audi coming in as well. Fantastic for the sport and for the overall competitive level. The power unit and how it's been configured puts an really interesting challenge on the cars and the car design to make that into exciting racing. And we're doing all of the arm wrestling and collaboration at the moment between the teams and the FIA to get those rules to the point that they will do exactly that. And there's a really clear target that, you know, these cars will be within 2 seconds of the lap times in qualifying and in race of the current cars. So, and it's going to be just a whole new level of Formula One. I think that's going to be super exciting. It's going to be more sustainable. It's going to open up the sport to new fans as well, or people who are kind of F1 fans but don't quite want to admit they are, because there's a bit of guilt in being associated to this sort of symbol of conspicuous consumption. And actually, one of the big things you can take away is that look what's going on here. Mm-hmm. And we've had sort of partners tell us, and you know, companies we work with say, oh, we were talking to this NGO recently, and they're like, oh, well, we can't really be into F1 because it's like this and this. And they're like, no, but look, this is now, and look what's coming. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, that's so cool, because actually we all really love it and really love watching it. And so there's a barrier that we're taking away as well. And that's an opportunity just to open and broaden the sport even further. And that also is super exciting.
You can have both.
Exactly. Having your cake and eating it is exactly what we want to do.
Yeah. And I just think then, like, just the excitement of then knowing that we get to do that and that we get to create this incredible thing. And then that there is also this positive ripple that will come behind that. And I think just knowing that the fuel that is going to be created is something that can transform internal combustion engines, which we know will not disappear in the short term. And so actually, that not only do we get to have our cake and eat it and have this amazing spectacle that is more sustainable, but that we're also having this massively positive ripple effect beyond what we're doing, and actually that transforms parts of the sustainability space and creates the solutions that we need to have. And so it's, when you think about it, you step back, you're like, well, that's quite awe-inspiring, actually, yeah. To kind of step back from it and be like, yeah, just not just looking at tomorrow, but actually what does the next 5 years look like? And that is, it's very exciting.
Yeah, that's actually sort of how I came into motorsport. My background in university was focused on transportation, autonomous and electric. Autonomous is a whole other conversation, but I came into motorsport for that exact reason of, this is a place where we can be testing out technologies, driving innovation, no pun intended, but for things in the mass market and for transportation. And so I think it's really, really powerful and great to hear.
Yeah, and it's as much, all of these technologies and, you know, all the hardware ultimately comes back to human software. Yeah. It's people behind it all, and what we find in terms of the learning. Of course, there is trickle down, and what you're seeing in a high-performance AMG car now, the battery solution is derived from F1, but you're talking 5 to 10 years, given product cycles there. What we can transfer so much faster is the how we work. Mm-hmm. And there's a car that Mercedes built, the EQXX, the most efficient electric vehicle in the world. And that was built with what they would call a sort of F1 mindset of, let's set some really unreasonable targets, an even more unreasonable timeline, and then let's go and improve on both. And Mercedes were able to use this, using some of the technical expertise from the team at Brixworth, a little bit of the expertise from the team at Brackley, and a whole lot of the expertise from the amazing engineers at Mercedes-Benz R&D in Sindelfingen in Stuttgart, and they brought together this car that can do 1,000 kilometers on a single charge. And it's just an incredible vehicle with a battery solution designed and produced in Brixworth, with some carbon fiber rear suspension and battery box produced here at Brackley, and all that input from the designers in Sindelfingen as well. And that was done in record time. Yeah. And it's just this wonderfully emblematic vehicle of the direction of travel for personal mobility and of the ability of really ambitious teams to tackle these challenges. Yeah. And it's a lovely symbol of what we're trying to do in F1 as well. Yeah.
The level of ambition is truly unmatched.
Passion, drive, and patience, the formula for winning F1 championships, is sometimes also what you need to keep your beloved car running day in and day out. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're looking for speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. They have over 122 million parts for your car. You'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And they have eBay Guaranteed Fit, which means your part is guaranteed to fit your car every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're about burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. So keep your car alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Okay, friends, today we're talking about sleep, and specifically getting better sleep. If you can relate to having trouble falling asleep and staying asleep and getting good quality sleep, then listen up. We are so excited to share a new product we've been using from Beam, their Dream Powder. Our listeners will get a special discount on this Dream Powder. It's a science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. It tastes insane. I did it last night, and I woke up this Monday morning feeling incredibly refreshed. I gave it to my little sister and she loved it too. They also have amazing flavors, sea salt caramel, brownie batter, vanilla chai, and then of course the original flavor, cinnamon cocoa. It's been tested for high quality efficacy and formulated to ease your body into rest, supporting all four stages of the sleep cycle to help you stay asleep longer and fall asleep faster. Other sleep aids can cause next day grogginess, but Dream contains a powerful all natural blend of reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and wake up refreshed. If you want to try the best-selling Dream Powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/paddockproject and use code paddockproject for up to 40% off. We have been very busy lately and have been really trying to do everything we can to feel our best as we wind up the summer and head into a very busy fall. And one thing we've been doing to help us and support us is using our Happy Mammoth products, especially Estro Control. It helps to support our hormones and alleviate any of those pesky PMS symptoms, including bloating. And it also assists in maintaining cognitive health and promoting liver function and digestive health. Happy Mammoth also has the amazing Hormone Harmony supplement dedicated to making women's lives easier. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women, and they make no compromise when it comes to quality. For a limited time, get 15% off your order at happymammoth.com with code F1RTheGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code F1RTheGirls for 15% off today. Like most people, we love a great deal, but what we don't love is jumping through a million hoops just to end up saving a few dollars, especially when it comes to wireless plans. There's so many promos and offers out there, but they do really make it hard to get good quality savings. With Mint Mobile, it really is so easy though. For just $15 a month, you can get a wireless plan when you get a 3-month plan. And the website and activation process are so seamless. Honestly, the longest part of this process is going to be the time that you spend on hold trying to break up with your old provider. To get started, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. There you can see that right now all 3-month plans are only $15 a month, including the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your old phone number along with all of your existing contacts. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. That's mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/F1RTheGirls. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions may apply.
So speaking of ambitious targets, Mercedes became the first motorsport team to sign the Climate Pledge, which is a bunch of companies committing to or pledging net zero by 2040. Talk to us about that decision and what made you all decide to do that.
So fundamentally, I think partnership is super important to sustainability. We've kind of touched on it already. We're not going to get there on our own. And so Climate Pledge really stood out to us because A, it's ambitious. 2040 is 10 years earlier than Paris, which says when we need to be at net zero. So it's challenging us, and we like to be challenged. But equally, there's an amazing group of people behind that, you know, founded by Amazon, but a huge wealth of knowledge, and crucially from different sectors. Knowledge from the transportation sector, from pharmaceuticals, from literally every industry you can think of, bringing them together and going, actually, the challenges we face in sustainability, they're the same. Like one of the biggest challenges we face is how we move people and parts around the world. That is the same challenge that Amazon has when it fulfills all of our deliveries, for example. So it's great to be able to collaborate, and they've got some great kind of forums. You know, I was with them in London for Climate Action Week, kind of talking in great depth about how we can help our supply chains get to net zero. And it was really interesting to hear, we had a range of kind of multinational corporation down to UK-based companies, small, medium-sized supply chain, all the way through to, you know, some of the biggest suppliers in the world. And actually kind of distilling, here's how we could work together on this, and here's how we could start to share ideas. And I took so many notes out of that meeting and kind of conversations that have come from it. And I think it's just, you learn so much from being part of a group of experts, and then hopefully we can also give to that group so that we can share our knowledge around SAF, which I would definitely say I have spent a long time in the last 2 years kind of understanding the market and being able to share that now, for example, with F1 and with other F1 teams, but equally to be able to share that with people that we met at that event. So for me, the Climate Pledge is a great symbol of our commitment and our ambition, but it's also how we then drive that change. And it's so important that we're not just signing up to something, but that backing it up is this wealth of kind of ambition and targets and strategies that we're already looking at, how we're going to work with our supply chain, how we continue to improve logistics, and how we build on the things that we've done. So for example, biofuels last year, fantastic in the European season to see sort of 67% reduction in emissions. This year we're targeting 100, but then also how do we then stack that with, you know, the non-European races? How do we then go, well, let's look at more sea freight rather than air freight, then let's look at biofuels at the end of that, or rail freight, and actually how do we start to stack complex logistical supply chains together? Because I think I came into this naively, and then I sat down with the logistics team, and I was like, so how do we move things? And they were like, well, And then you start to realise just how complicated our sport is. But it's the same as other industries. And so that's why I think it's a great group to be a part of.
It makes so much sense.
And I think the other key thing it does is it drives, we talked about it earlier in performance terms, but it forces us to generate momentum.
Yeah.
That target isn't moving. Mm. And one of the great things about Formula One, your first race isn't moving. Mm. It's not like having a product launch where you can shift it back a couple of months because you're not quite ready. You have to hit that deadline. And giving ourselves deadlines, putting ourselves under the right amount of healthy pressure to continuing delivering year on year, not getting to 2038 and going, oh my God, what are we going to do about this 2040? This 2040 thing that we signed up to. But actually being able to take and being able, you know, having the luxury of taking a 10 to 15 year vision of, right, this is where we're going to get to. And of course, we're on a journey that mirrors Mercedes-Benz globally with their Ambition 2039 and, you know, big environmental and sustainability targets for major stakeholders and major partners. But to deliver that, it's all the incremental gains and all the incremental work. And Ali said supply chain. In October, we've got a first sustainability event for our supply chain where some of them will have loads of stuff to teach us. And in other areas, we're going to have to provide real support to some really small companies to understand, okay, how can we go on this journey without compromising our ultimate business? Because a business that goes bust because it's trying to hit a sustainability target and forgets its core purpose, that makes very little sense. But we're going to play that supportive role of trying to help them go on a journey that actually enhances the value of their business as well. And it's another example of that ripple effect that's really, really exciting.
And I think it also it allows us to make those investments in things like carbon removal with that much longer term look, because we know where we need to be in 2040 and we know the technology that needs scaling in that space. So it gives us this really clear kind of target to aim for and then allows us to do things that we maybe wouldn't be able to do without that really clear North Star of where we're heading. So I think it's also really great for innovation in that space.
Totally. But so much of it is also about bringing people along that journey, like you were saying, because it is a long time frame. It can be hard for people to envision what 2040 holds just in general in their own lives. How do you think about sustainability and storytelling and communicating that to fans and to the public at Mercedes? Because it is quite a tricky thing to do.
I think we're still learning how to do it and how best to do it. It's very easy to say what we're doing, but to get people really engaged, enthused, and excited by what's happening is a whole different challenge. And that starts internally and sort of builds from there a little bit, like I was talking about earlier. But carbon removal is a great example. And we had this working group quite recently with our partners and we put our press release out about carbon removals and it got good attention in sort of trades around the sustainability space. And I think most of the Formula One media and the racing media were like, don't really understand that. What is that? It's a bit obtuse and it sounds very complicated. And isn't that just the same as offsetting, which has had a really bad press? And so we've actually got a role to explain this stuff to fans, to explain this stuff to the media who take it to the fans, and to make it human and exciting and interesting. So it's not about press releases. It's a lot more about video content and bringing voices to life that do it. We talked, didn't we, about biofuels and the biofuel project, and actually doing a piece of content that traces all the way through from the team in finance that are making it happen and in legal that are doing all of the really intricate detail work there through to the guys driving the trucks and filling them with the right stuff and not the wrong stuff and all the bits of the value chain. And we'll find it involves 30 to 40 people across the organization to get the right sustainable fuel into the trucks as they travel around Europe. But recognizing and celebrating that team effort is a really important part of it. And then also working out from our side, how can we help educate the fan base and support them in making more sustainable choices as well? And, you know, sort of a fan is a petrol head, but a sustainable petrol head from 2026.
Like we said, you can't have both.
And I think there's a huge appetite from our fans. If there are two transport solutions and one is more sustainable, I think a lot of the fans will take that more sustainable solution, as long as it doesn't provide a sort of pain penalty that's way higher. So working with the promoters, promoting what the promoters are doing at their different events in order to encourage
fans to make the choices they would really love to make if they could. Mm. Or you look at how trackside catering works and how many fans would take a lower carbon footprint meal versus a higher one if they knew and if those options were on offer, for example. Those are all the areas and the touch points we can be looking at as well in order to help inform and support choices that we sense and from research we do, we know our fans really want to make if they're on offer. Yeah. And finding, aligning the incentive of offering that and why it makes sense for the promoters, makes sense for the sport, and makes sense for our fans too.
Yeah. That's really been our experience. People are super excited and want to be engaged and want to learn more. They just sometimes don't know where to look.
Yeah, and you know, you look at some of the races, Melbourne or somewhere like that, what's more fun? Going on the tram amongst all those Formula One fans, getting the kind of experience that is like going to a soccer match in the UK or to you know, an NFL game and having tailgate parties in the US, or driving, you know, two or three of you in your car.
Yes.
One's more convenient, but what's more exciting, what's more a part of the buzz of the event is that collective and shared experience. 100%. And often that more sustainable solution is also a much more social and socially interactive solution than the less sustainable individual alternative. And that social experience, that festival style experience of being at a Formula One race is a thing that's building and growing. And so it seems within easy reach for all of us to align that low hanging fruit on sustainability and the growth of the sport and the growing fandom around the sport too.
I mean, that's what sport's all about. It's community and it's about bringing people together. And I love that. So last question before, just a couple quick fire questions. So when we talk about storytelling, we talk about humans. Obviously, it's really helpful to have figureheads and people who are really good at telling stories. Lewis Hamilton is one of those people. And he has been such a big part of the Mercedes story, super helpful, I'm sure, in terms of sustainability, obviously performance on track, but sustainability and social issues. How are you thinking about the era after Lewis at Mercedes?
It's a really good question. I mean, it's going to be a new chapter in our story. And I think when we get to the end of this season, how we celebrate what we've achieved together, the way in which Lewis has made us a better team and our team has helped make him a better driver, the impacts and the breadth of impact he has made and what we've created together and co-created in many areas that is having already its ripple effect on the sport and accessibility to the sport, that's going to be super, super important. And he will leave the Mercedes star a little bit shinier and a little brighter than it was before. You know, he joined the Mercedes family equally. He leaves the team, but doesn't leave the team. We have this idea that once you've been here, you're always part of it, whether you're at another team or you move on or you retire or whatever it may be. And we know that Ferrari will be the almost certainly final chapter of his driving career. But when that concludes, be it with an eighth championship or eighth, ninth and however many, or with no more championships, but just a remarkable chapter to finish an extraordinary career, Mercedes will be the lion's share of his time in Formula One. And, you know, until the end of this year, he will never have driven a single racing lap in anything powered by anything other than a Mercedes. So it goes all the way back to when he was sort of 12 years old and the company with McLaren started supporting him. So, you know, you don't undo those ties just because he's moving on to drive somewhere else for a period, to, you know, and fulfilling another one of his very cherished ambitions. So from that sense, Lewis will always be part of the family, and, you know, our achievements together in 15 years, in 20 years when we look back, we, you know, that will be a huge part of his legacy and his of ours. And then where we go next, we still don't know, but it's going to have all the excitement of the new and the freshness and the how we continue building on the commitments we have in environmental impact and social impact and a whole new sporting story and dynamic. And that's super exciting. Likewise, as we have with Lewis, a sort of Mercedes homegrown talent, so we have with George, who's doing an amazing job this year and performing at such a high level through qualifying and the races, and who is also
building his understanding and ability to be an advocate in the areas and the spaces that are important to him and authentic mm-hmm. for him. And it will be really interesting to see him take on even more of a leadership role externally and within the organisation as he, you know, as we take that step and enter into 2025 and then beyond as well. So I think there's a lot of determination to write the final pages of the Lewis chapter in the very best way we can, and then a lot of excitement about what the next chapter holds.
That's a beautiful place to be. I think it's, I'm sure, very bittersweet, but what an exciting time. And we've loved seeing George sort of blossom, maybe is the wrong word, but blossom over the past several years at Mercedes and really grow into himself and his role and his driving. So we're very excited to see even more from him. So just quickly to wrap up, since we're at Brackley, I would love to just do a couple quick fire questions. First one, favorite place at Brackley in the factory?
Oh, I think for me, it's our hub, which is our on-site restaurant, which is just a really nice place to go, because exactly as we've kind of talked about, like running into people, bumping into them, it's just really nice to go there and you'll sit there and like five different people from all over the site walk in, hi, chat. I just really like that kind of community feel.
Yeah. I love the race space because it's where we gather. And in my time here, actually where we're sitting now used to be sort of the mid-air space where you used to see those championship photos taken with that set of stairs, and they used to be the race bays, and it's now where our composites department sits, but the new ones as well. And we have around those race bays the different banners that we've signed, all the team members have signed each achievement of a championship, and for each season as well. So they're the space that where we're able to bring the largest quantity and percentage of the team together. Mm-hmm. And so for me, yes, they're where the race cars get built, but just as importantly, they're so where everyone's effort comes together at the factory, but also the space where we gather to celebrate, commiserate, mark people who are cherish team members who are leaving and moving on, and their leaving sort of moments happen there. And it's just a space of a real shared emotion and shared experience.
I love that. Race you're most looking forward to the rest of the season?
So I am, fingers crossed, looking forward to the final race of the season, because I'm hoping it's going to go down to the wire. Just looking forward to just the excitement, the anticipation, you know, at the end of an incredibly busy season. I just can't wait to see what that throws up.
Yes. For me, Brazil, just because I love Brazil, and it's just the, if you could bottle what Interlagos has and sprinkle it everywhere, all the races would be even better. It's just, yeah, for me, one of the magical venues in Formula One.
That's very high on our list to go, hopefully someday. And lastly, I'm sure it's very difficult to choose, but favorite Mercedes memory?
So I think it's one we spoke about earlier. I was watching us get the 1-2 in quali on Saturday.
Where were you?
I was sitting on my sofa at home, feeling tender after the wedding, and then just everyone in the family slowly like drifting in and being like, oh, what are you watching? And then everybody together, like that moment of just like pure excitement.
Oh, I love that.
I think for me, and I'll probably get slightly emotional sort of telling it, but it's remembering Nicky when he was here in Brackley and he said, the championships we've won together meant more to him than the ones he won as a driver. And I can't remember him without getting a bit soppy and emotional, which he'd laugh at and point and say, you absolute idiot, what's going on? And actually saying it sort of calms you down, but no, remembering him saying that and then the Monaco win, the weekend after, he'd passed away.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. Well, when we drove in, we saw Lauda drive or Lauda away, which is amazing. And seeing some of his pictures and things in reception, just so incredible. What an incredible, incredible man. And so lucky to have had all of those memories together.
Yeah, he was a very special figure to have around.
Well, on that note, thank you both so much. We had the absolute best time, learned so much from you, and we're cheering for Mercedes the rest of the season and hope you enjoy the summer shutdown coming up. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.